I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, Wilder Ball has got the world in motion, and I can't believe it's true. And when we discuss Borough's win against Huddersfield, we touch on the midweek game against Preston, we highlight some individual performances, we chat about Borough's supporters' statement, and we look ahead to Swansea, and of course, we answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is all your matchday chatter in a pod.
Lemon for Craig Hignett, hit it Higgy, Higgy hits the trap!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all the Borough matchday chatter in a podcast. And well, Chris Wilder got his first win as Borough boss in a 2-1 victory over Huddersfield. The win was Borough's first win in six, and it helped Borough climb up to 12th place in the championship table. Guys, I want to start off and ask you, how are you feeling in three words? Dana, do you want to go first?
Yes, I'm actually prepared this time. I've got drill-worthy, professional and inspired is my three words to describe that game yesterday.
Okay, and why is that?
Well, drill-worthy speaks for itself, really. That first half was just unbelievable. It's the best football that I've seen in a long, long time. And then to couple that with a really professional performance in the second half, in which we didn't dominate as much, but we did what we needed to do to break the game up and to disrupt Huddersfield's getting into the game, basically, and getting their foot on the ball, and inspired because we've seen a new lease of life, I think, from certain players and just the team as a whole, really.
Okay, good three words, and I'd echo all that as well. Tom, do you want to go?
Well, I went for best one yet, and I mean, it's only based off three games, but that was the best performance we've seen so far. We've seen gradual signs of improvement since the Millwall game, and it just seemed like it all came together yesterday.
Oh, two good. I'm going to go with Mark Bowler, underrated. I just think he's a wonderful talent, and I think he's very, very consistent when he does play. And I think that the wing-back system that we have under Chris Wilder is so important to how we play. And looking at our average positions, looking at the average sprints that our wing-backs have had in previous games, and key passes as well, they've all went up astronomically in the last three games, but very impressed with our wing backs. But Mark Bowler, I think he's just very, very underrated as a player.
Are we all on the Bowler bus?
I'm all aboard the Bowler bus. Yeah. it's like it's going to be like the 36 going from Millsborough to Hartlepool, just trying to pick people up to get him on.
Love it.
But yeah, guys, we'll start off with Preston this week, and then we'll briefly cover it, and then we'll chat about the Huddersfield game on Saturday. But on midweek, Middlesbrough lost 2-1 at the Riverside against Preston, with Ched Evans and Emil Rees-Jacobson giving Preston the win later on. But it was Middlesbrough's problem, really. They give the game away. But down to 53%, 18 shots, 11 corners, majority was spent in the opponent's half, but still defeat. How would you assess that performance midweek?
I would assess it by calling it typical Borough. I think that epitomised that phrase. We dominated throughout, and it did feel as though we were in the ascendancy and that second goal was coming. It kind of felt like we were going to leave it late, but that we were going to get that second goal and wrap the game up. And then all of a sudden, the second goal that is scored in the match is from Preston, and then they score another one and take the 3 points away. It was so it was so Borough, wasn't it? It was so fitting to the narrative that this season has really been shaped around of we just shoot ourselves in the foot. And me and Tom were sat there and absolutely baffled. I'm still baffled, really. I think it's been 5 days since that game. It was just madness, really. And really just, it does epitomise how Borough have been this season, where we were nearly there and then we hit self-destruct.
We absolutely did. But Tom, excluding the goal against Huddersfield yesterday, we can include it if you want, but a combined XG of 0.13 and 0.46 against Huddersfield, clearly it's mistakes that is the main reason why we're conceding goals. But how do we look to iron those out even more?
I think just repetition on the training ground and you know, decent man management. I mean, that one against Preston, you know, if that had happened at the end of a game on FIFA, you'd be complaining about scripting and leaving the game. Like, how on earth Bamber thought that was a good idea to just bounce the ball off McNair? I've no idea. But, you know, it's good that we've got such a low expected XG against. It is obviously mistakes that's doing it. It's, like I say, repetition, making sure we are defending cohesively as a unit. And it did seem like that was the case yesterday. So, like I say, early signs of improvement. But there's still a long way to go, which is encouraging as well.
Absolutely. With the final question on Preston, we looked at the average positions midweek in our Twitter spaces. And if anyone hasn't listened to our Twitter spaces before, we are going to be doing them after every single midweek game this season. So you can just come in, join and have a bit of crack with us as well. But Tom, Mills were really aggressive in the press midweek. And I know you've seen there's little things that Borough added to the game under Chris Wilder. And when we look at the average positions, 7 out of the 11 players against Preston were in their half. Was that definitely something to build on in the game on Saturday? Could you see where Chris Wilder?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, you can see it in the average positions yesterday as well. The fact that Isaiah Jones has finally got over the halfway line just slightly, but he is there. And you know, the defensive three, you know, all around the centre circle, and they've pushed together. That you can see the line between them. You can see signs of that in the Preston game as well. And I thought we did do well there. It's just, like we said, mistakes that cost us. But it does seem like it's coming together. And it does seem like everyone has a plan when we're pressing. You can see it at the front because you'll have usually the two strikers pushing up either side. And like Crooks will be the one pushing up as well and pressing as a free. You can see it in defence. They're pressing as a three, and you know, we're getting the wingers back as a five as well. It does look like everyone kind of knows their role in that press, which is good to see. You know, and it's not like we're pressing individually. We are pressing as one, and there is shape to it.
Yeah, shape is wonderful. I think looking at yesterday, I think probably the best shape I've seen a Borough side have in about a good three or 4 years. It was really, really good shape, good movement, good press. And let's chat about it, Dana, because yesterday's performance against Huddersfield was a very untypical Borough performance.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, as I said at the top of the show, it's the best that I've seen us play in that first half for a long, long time. We dominated possession. I mean, we had this little game, didn't we, where we would guess our possession at the end of the match, and usually it was sort of 40s, wasn't it? I think maybe somebody predicted 30 at some point, because we never dominated possession. So that was really refreshing to see. Wilder obviously speaking about playing on the front foot and dominating the ball, because we do have good players in possession, and we saw that yesterday. There was great movement off the ball to provide options for whoever was in control of it. Overloads out wide caused problems again, providing options in attack. Matt Crooks absolutely everywhere. Great pressing, great intent to win the ball back. And I think the player that epitomises Chris Wilder ball the most at the moment is Johnny Howson, because he's been brilliant in the 3 games that we've seen of him. He was unbelievable yesterday. He took control from Lewis O'Brien and Scott High in the Huddersfield midfield and really showed them up. And then to sort of balance it out defensively, our shape was really good as well. We barely gave Huddersfield a sniff. So that was, honestly, I say it was Drew worthy. It was unbelievable watching us pass the ball like that and play football. That was football, and that was wonderful to watch.
Yeah, I'd always say on commentary, I don't know how many people listened to yesterday because obviously BBC Tees was fully out. But Maddo was saying, I can't believe I'm watching Middlesbrough play actual football. Yeah. So it was interesting to say that. But interesting you mentioned Harrison then. I think you're absolutely spot on. I think he's benefited the most under Chris Wilder. It's mainly because we've got the foot on the ball. We've abandoned the man-marking system to some extent. I appreciate there's always going to be some sort of man-marking system in place in a game, but he's been able, once we had the ball, we've got more possession, you know, there's less pressure on him to move around the pitch. I think the man-marking system stretched the whole team at times and left him exposed, which of course can lead to a number of arguments saying his legs have gone, you know, but it really, I think tactically, Wilder's really benefiting him at the moment. And it'd be interesting to see if Piero does come back in, what we do with Housen, because Crooks can comfortably play that role just as much as Housen can as well. But I thought he was very, very good, and he's been arguably very, very consistent and very positive since Wilder's came in. But Tom, I want to hear your thoughts on Huddersfield, because it was a very, very good performance and you were absolutely buzzing in the group chat. So how are you feeling about it?
Oh, it was a great game. Really, really enjoyed watching it. And I kind of echo what Dana said. That's the best football we've seen for a long time. You know, Dana was just saying before we started here, it was better than, you know, Woodgate, Pulis, Warnock, Monk. I'd go kind of back so far as to say, like, that's kind of up there with some of the football we saw under Karanka. And it's been a long time since we've seen anything that good possession-wise. Just to kind of go off one of the points Dan just made there in terms of the possession, what I really like about us at the moment is that, just in contrast to what we were doing with Warnock, where we're like aimlessly hoofing it into the channels and giving it away, if we can't see anywhere to go, we will recycle it, go backwards, and then try a different route. Which I think it's great what Wilder's been able to do in so little time to turn the team around. But also we've known since, and we've said it multiple times since the start of the season, that this team is good playing with the ball on the deck, and they do have that technical ability. It's just we weren't using it before, and it just seems like it needed the right manager to kind of get it out of them.
He absolutely has, and I think he just deserves a lot of credit for his tactical breakdown yesterday, Wilder. But Dana, Huddersfield are known for a set piece side. You know, they like to stretch teams, get long shots away. You know, they've got the ability to do that, and Middlesbrough pretty much nullified them yesterday, didn't they? Why do you think they did that? How do you think they did that?
Well, firstly, we won the midfield battle. We were so much more aggressive. The energy between Crooks, Tav and Housen was far superior. I think Lewis O'Brien and Scott High just kept giving the ball away, which definitely helped us. We were picking it up, and we were really incisive in bringing the ball forward as quickly as we possibly could. But also, we had a decently high line, and so did they. And that compacts the central areas of the pitch, and it's a feature of Chris Wilder's play, that high line, and basically condensing the football to that middle third. And when that happens, you need to win those battles, those little, you know, the tackles. You need to be good with your interceptions. You need to be good in those 1v1s with you know, your marker. And we were absolutely fantastic there. And I was looking on the Huddersfield forums, and they were saying that's the worst that they've played this season. But I'm not going to use that to deter away from the praise for Borough, because I think that was their worst performance this season, because Borough made them look very, very, very poor. And of course, what we tweeted after the game, that was their first defeat at home in 2 months. 5 straight games they went with a win at home, 4 successive clean sheets, and we schooled them, really. I think that was their kids for a quid game, and we completely schooled them.
Kids for a quid game, Jesus Christ. good little phrase. I like that, we'll school them as well. But Tom, recent performances, you've been very, very positive since Chris Wilder's came in. Now we've got the result that we needed, and we've got the result that we deserved. How do we continue to build on that now? Because one win's great, but you've got to do a lot more in the Championship.
It's like I said earlier, repetition. It's going to require a lot more work on the training ground. We've still got a ways to go. Like I said, we've got encouraging signs at the moment. The shape's really good. Everyone seems to know what they're doing. And up until January, that needs to be it. It just needs to be constant work. and getting better and better at this system. And I know in January, I mean, he spoke about it this week, you know, exciting list of targets and stuff. We never had an exciting list of targets since Gordon Strachan was spotted walking into the Riverside with a piece of bait with Jack Wilshere on it. So I'm looking forward to seeing who he wants to bring in. But I'm absolutely confident that it's going to be people who are going to fit this system and, you know, give us a good second half of the season, kind of based on what we've seen so far.
Absolutely. Let's break it down by players then, because Middlesbrough made one change to the side that lost against Preston midweek. And it was an enforced change as well, with Lee Pelletier missing out and Anthony Dyke-Steele coming back in. Dana, Anthony Dyke-Steele, I know you're a big fan of his performances and his butt cheeks. But
that's you, Anthony Dyke-Steele last cheeks club, not me.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. He's got a cracking glutes. But does it show how important he is to this side? Because Mills were looking very, very balanced yesterday with him on that right side of centre back.
Yeah, he's a brilliant defender, is Anthony Dyke-Steele. And to be fair, I did think he started the game a little bit rusty. He did give the ball away a couple of times. He had the gigantic touch of the ball at one point, which the commentator noted. To be fair, though, the commentator was calling Isaiah Jones Isaiah Osborne, so he was rolling back the years with that. We were talking about Gordon Strachan. But he was brilliant once he really got into the game. He's so comfortable in that right side of centre-half position. And that's probably his home now for the future. I can't really see him playing right wing back. He suits playing that right sided centre half role because he's so good in his recoveries. Whenever a winger thinks they've got past Anthony Dyke-Steele, he has the pace and the composure to recover those yards and to get back. And he's very clever and like I said, composed defensively. And I thought he was really good. It's a shame for Lee Pelletier actually though, because obviously three weeks out injured now. He's been fantastic. He probably had his best game in a Borough shirt against Preston, and he gets injured, which is just typical of our luck this season. But I think once Pelletier is back, he would probably struggle to get back into that side, because I can see Dyke-Steele continuing to excel in that right centre back role.
Well, Tom, do you think that Pelletier is going to come back in?
No.
No, fair enough.
end of question. No, I think Dyke-Steele probably suits it. I think there's been, you know, a debate for quite a while of where his best position actually is. Is it right back? Is it centre defensive midfield, which he was originally right-sided centre back? I think in this system, with the fact that he's so good with the ball at his feet, I think he's going to do really well at that right centre back role.
Okay, so what's Borough's best defensive three then? If Pelletier is not going to come back in, what do you think it's going to be?
To be honest, I don't think it's too much different from what we saw yesterday. I'd have Dyke-Steele at the right centre-back role. I'd have McNair on the left. Both comfortable with the ball at the feet and both can bring it out. But I'd probably swap Bamba for Fry when he comes back in. Fry, I think, could do that role quite well, but it's just a bonus that he's out of the three centre-backs that are left that could play that position, which I think are him, Bamba and Hall. I would say he's definitely the one who's most comfortable with the ball on his feet. It's not going to be his role to bring it out from the back as much as it is the centre-backs either side of him, but it's going to benefit us a lot more that he's technically better than the other two.
Do you think it's a bit unfair, though, to drop Bamba, given that his recent performances, I mean, by the mistake, have been fairly solid? He looks like he's commanding that back line.
It's just if he's going to be able to stay fit and play the entire season, though. I think there's going to come a point in this system where, you know, someone younger would be better in it. And I think the thing about Bamba is, although he has been playing well, it does always seem like he's got a mistake in him. There has been a few times this season where, you know, he's had a bit of a let-off, really. I think, if I'm remembering right... Oh, no, I'm not remembering at all. It was it came at the Riverside that midweek game and hit the post in the first...
He slipped against Barnsley. I think there was a moment against...
Millwall
where Crook... I think... No, sorry, I'm remembering wrong. Actually, it was Crooks that made a mistake, and then Bamba made up for it. But yeah, he slipped against Barnsley and they hit the post.
Yeah, so we just need consistency in that role. And I think when the ball's at his feet, it does seem like Bamba has a mistake in him sometimes, but I get that impression less from Fry, really.
Okay. See, I think that Fry has to earn his place back into the team. I don't think it's a given that he just comes in and replaces Sol Bamba, because, you know, we spoke about how he does have a mistake in him, but I think largely he has been really, really solid. And I feel like he keeps his place, and then Fry, we need a mentality almost of, right, if you want to get your place back, you need to fight for it back, which I think will breed a really good dynamic in the squad of competition. And I think that's really what we need, isn't it? Competition. And I mean, Fry will eventually get his place back. Of course he will. I agree. I think he's in that best defensive three for me, but I think he has to fight for his place back.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Dana. I think he does have to fight it back. But then also you've got the option as well, for the options, Dawn, for them to play Dale Fry on the left-hand side of the three. You can maybe push McNair up into centre defensive midfield. I appreciate you might have to drop House in for that. But of course, McNair's proved that he can spray a ball 40, 50, 60 yards. You know, he can help us tick. You know, he's got that defensive nuance about him. So I think it's interesting. We've definitely got options to maybe play around with. And I think that he will have to earn his place to come back into the side. But if the likeliest change, you could probably maybe see Bamba obviously for Fry. But again, it's like he has to earn that position back. I think Bamba's been very, very good leadership-wise in that back line. But it'd be interesting to see what we do when Fry does come back in. But let's move up the pitch and chat about Andros Spera. He's only on loan for the season, Tom. Really, really great movement yesterday and really contributing to the side. But it's a lack of goals, of course. But does it really matter if he's helping create other chances for his teammates?
No, not really. You know, if he is helping to create those chances and we're winning games because of it, that's all you can really ask for from anyone in the team. Obviously, he has been signed as a striker and you would expect him to chip in with goals, but if he's contributing in a different way and helping, say, like Watmore or someone else get on the end of chances and score, then I'm all for that. You know, he had kind of a half chance yesterday, which he came fairly close with, but overall, it does seem like that's his role now, to link up between midfield and attack, and I think he has been doing that well.
It looks like Bernie Slaven's 20 goals a season is going to still live on. But Dana, Spera, like I was saying, they're known for his movement. But Saturday, did it really prove how good his movement actually is against Huddersfield? Because the space that he was creating for Duncan Watmore was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. If you watch the goals back, you can see his influence on the attacks that we had, because for the first goal, he comes across, I think it's Tom Lees, and takes him a little bit out of Watmore's vision, really, and then Watmore comes into that space. And then similarly for the second goal, he drops deep. I think Matty Pearson comes with him, and then in that space that Matty Pearson has left in behind, Watmore takes that space in behind. Then Crooks with that fantastic no-look pass, which was just ridiculous, to be honest, against his former club. I mean, he made a point there, didn't he, to Huddersfield? And that's what Spera does, to be honest. You got that classic striker drops deep and another striker that's going to be the one to receive. And you would think that Spera would be the one to receive, but Spera is very good at dropping deep and linking up play. And I think what we've seen from Watmore is that he's pretty clinical with his chances. So, the movement of Spera, the link-up play, the dynamic between those two strikers is very good, very exciting and very promising as well, because I'm sure there's much more to come from both of them.
Absolutely. Let's chat about Duncan Watmore then, Tom, because it's the start and the return of his form from last season. And we could rely on him so much last year, Duncan Watmore. But he started the season a little bit cold. But given that Borough linked with a striker or two in the window, can Chris Wilder rely on him to chip in with goals? And do you think he will keep him in the 11 if we do bring another striker?
Well, I think it goes back to what you were just saying about competition for places. I don't think signing a striker in January automatically means that Watmore's going to lose his place there. I do think he's going to be relied on this season, but I also do think that that's a specific position where Wilder's wanting options done. Because you can see kind of at the end of the games where Watmore is looking knackered and he has to come off. He's playing Ornel Hernandez there rather than, say, like Uche or any kind of natural striker. So it does indicate to me that he wants someone quick and pacey in that role to get in behind the defence. So I do think we're going to bring in a specialised striker for that role in January. But I don't think that means that Watmore loses his place. I think it just means that that striker has to make the most of his chances when he gets on the pitch and try and fight for that place.
Yeah, well, absolutely, absolutely. The competition for places now is absolutely brilliant. I think if we go back to the strikers, Watmore and Sparrow, I thought were absolutely superb yesterday. They showed, they give Huddersfield a torrid time. And I think the Sparrow's movement, like you were both saying there, was superb. The way he was able to bring the defence away, create the space for Watmore. And I think Watmore's finishing yesterday was absolutely superb. There was two really, really good goals. And I thought we deserved an actual 2-0 win, but it wasn't the case with an own goal towards the end by Ornel Hernandez. Dana, you're not really being impressed with Ornel Hernandez, have you, since his signing in the summer? How do you think he can improve it?
I don't really know, to be honest, because it feels like with Hernandez, it is a case of square pegs in round holes. And what Chris Wilder's really been big on is having players that fit. And I'm really not sure that he fits the system, because I remember Jacob from Canary Cast said that he's played right wing back, but it just doesn't seem like it suits him, because Isaiah Jones did a fantastic job defensively yesterday. And then as soon as he comes off, unfortunately, Hernandez switches off and gets caught out. And Chris Wilder noted that in his post-match interview, and we concede from it. I mean, it's a comical, fluky own goal, and it must be said that even in a victory, Borough meme themselves. But it's just one of those things with Ornel. I mean, he played, I think, central as a striker almost, or as a secondary striker against Preston. And I do think that he was one of those players that Wilder was alluding to as playing for themselves and being individual in that second half. And I mean, he's a box of tricks, isn't he? But I sometimes wish that he would just get the ball into the box, or to at least see opportunities in the box, where sometimes he does hold on to the ball a little bit too much. I mean, what he does do well is he baits out those fouls and free kicks, which is brilliant for us. And if we can improve on our deliveries from out wide and gambling in the box, then that could be a threat for us. But does he fit into the system? I'm not so sure that he does.
Okay, so maybe a loan spell could probably come to the end then with Ornel Hernandez then. Do you think we might maybe end the loan early?
I'm not sure. Potentially, yeah, unless we are going to play him as a right wing back. But then I'm thinking, if Jed Spence is coming back in January, and I feel like he will do, then where does that put Hernandez? Does he then become a secondary striker almost? Because I'm sure we'll probably look to bring in Florian Balogun from Arsenal. I know he's been mentioned, but we will bring in another striker. So yeah, his place is I think his place can be questioned at the minute.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you as well. But let's move on. So happiness, guys, at the John Smith Stadium. But before we move on, Dana, you want to give a quick message about our charity, the M&D Association, this season?
Yeah, just a massive thank you to everybody that's donated so far. I think we've raised £1,370 as it stands, which is a fantastic amount for the MNDA. And that could go towards a wheelchair for somebody with motor neuron disease. It could go towards an iPad to enable them to communicate with their loved ones. Or it could, of course, go towards funding for research to find a cure. So just a massive thank you. This is running until June, I believe. So we're trying to raise as much as we can. We've got a target at the moment of £2,000. So hopefully we can hit that. And if anybody wants to donate anything at all, head to bit.ly/ the Borough Breakdown MND.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that, Dave. Well, thank you very much to everyone who's donated so far. I really do appreciate it. But guys, let's chat about something we've seen midweek. And Borough Support released a statement. So it's the Borough Supporters Forum, and it's the MSF. And they released a statement about crowds and supporters this season. But I quickly just wanted to cover it to hear your opinions on it. To give you a flavour of the issues that Borough supporters are fed up with, but not specific to a particular game. People taking drugs in the toilets, male supporters being in the female toilets with taking drugs and urinating sinks, female supporters being groped, fans being hit in the head by a flying pint, which I laughed at, to be fair. I know it's horrible, but I did laugh at that exact comment. But aggressive behaviour on the concourse, and then children witnessing fighting and drug taking in the toilets and concourse. bar the flying pint, which I know everyone absolutely hates, it was a very unique situation we find ourselves, isn't it? Because it was not particularly nice to hear, was it?
It's not unique, unfortunately. It's all too frequent. And I've been thinking a lot about what to say here. And admittedly, I've struggled because I can't really understand why this behaviour is still happening. I read the statement and I felt so disappointed. The point about women being groped. I think a lot of women, too many actually, don't feel safe in a lot of places. And I include myself in that. We're told to do what we can to keep ourselves safe, but it's not always up to us. And I can only speak for myself here, but I class football stadium as my safe space. And I can assume that it's the case for a lot of others too. So it's a shame that people take that away because they can't keep their hands to themselves. It's disgusting, to be honest. And I always believe that although we can't be perfect, we can always be better in you know, what we do. We can make better decisions. We can just do better things. And I think some people need to take a long, hard look at themselves.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah, just kind of shocking to read some of that. I mean, I've only really been to one away game this season myself, which was Reading away. And I think we arrived that late that, you know, didn't see a lot of anything in the concourse before we went up. But it's just daft. Like, you know, I've been to a lot of away games in my time as a fan, and you don't tend to see a lot of that. I know they said in the statement that they put out, it seemed to be a change since the return to stadiums, and I don't know if that might be the cause of it. Everyone's just kind of, don't know.
Get a bit carried away.
Yeah, like the novelty's not kind of worn off yet, and everyone is getting carried away with it. But yeah, it's just stupid behaviour, a lot of that, and kind of just echoing what Dana said. I think if you're doing that, you need to have a long, hard look at yourself.
It does highlight these issues, though, and it's good that people are speaking out about it. Obviously, in the case of you know, the sexual assault, that this is what it is, and people are sharing their stories so that people don't feel alone in it. And I mean, I just hope that we can. I just hope that we can live in a world where this doesn't happen, but unfortunately that's unrealistic. So hopefully there are measures in place to clamp that stuff out. And what's come from it that is really promising is that Borough fans have said that if they see that, they'll basically stand in solidarity with people that are being groped. And I do believe that, and I have hope in those people that they're not just words and they will be actions, and that we can stand together, really.
Absolutely. Lifetime bans, if it happens or anything's being caught, to be honest, I think we'd probably fully back that. But let's move on. Let's chat about questions for the week. So questions is when you send them in on Twitter and we answer them on the podcast. But Tom, we're going to start things off with you. It's from Charlie, and he says, although it's only three games to Wilder's reign, is this the best football we've played since 2003? Do you find our finishing, Sporran in particular versus Millwall today, and Tav in general, worrying? Do you think it's just a lack of confidence or something deeper?
Well, answer the first part. I don't think it's the best since 2003. I mean, it's only been three games. We've seen massive improvement in that time. But let's not forget that we have seen good football since then, specifically under Karanka. So I wouldn't kind of get carried away with that too much. I still think there's a way to go, and I think there's a lot more to come. I think the football will get better. In terms of the finishing, I don't think it's worrying too much. I think it's just we're going to create better chances as time goes on with Wilder as manager, and as we progress with this system. I think we saw glimpses of that against Huddersfield and the chances we were creating. And like I said, with repetition, with getting better with this system, I'm sure that we're going to see better finishing in the coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've already covered it today where we're chatting about Sporran, and we chat about Tav as well. Tav's shooting the season's been awful, but there is a way that they can contribute to this side. And sometimes it doesn't really matter how many goals you score like per individual. It's if the team wins. And I think we are starting to probably see that a little bit more now. I think with Spurra's movement and creating the space a lot more, then I don't think anyone can complain. I think with Tav as well, if he can get more assists and to his name, then again, it's the same really. If they're contributing, even if it's that third pass before the goal or something like that, and they're contributing in different areas, then it doesn't really make too much of a difference. I think we can get caught up in the assists and goals, but also with the when you see sometimes the player that we have, I think it doesn't really matter too much. As long as they're contributing, again, like 6 or 7 out of 10, that's all we kind of really want before. As long as we get results as well. But next question is from Matt, and I just want to hear both opinion on this one. This is, what's the biggest thing you've learnt and taken away from Wildersborough in the first 3 games? And does what you've seen alter your expectations for the rest of the season? Dana, do you want to go first on that one?
Yeah, I think what we've seen so far is that Chris Wilder's style of play suits the squad that we've got so much more than Warnock did. And I apologise for putting Warnock in that, because I know people will be like, well, you know, Warnock's in the past now, forget about him. But it is complete night and day, isn't it? Warnock's way is effective, and it's been shown to be effective given the success that he's had, but it just wasn't effective with this team. We spoke about it on the podcast a lot, about the players that we've got, the technical ability that we possess, and players that are good in possession that we weren't really seeing, because it was a case of, right, try to get the ball into the final third as quickly as possible and then play there. Whereas with Chris Wilder, he's identified the strengths, and I think Spurra and Watmore are perfect for his system because they've got that movement. You spoke there earlier, Johnny, about a false nine and number 10. That's what we've got, and that's what is working at the moment. So it's suiting the players. The style of players is much more effective to the squad, and it's making us play on the front foot, and that is brilliant. It's so refreshing. It's so good to see, because that's what we can do. So that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned and taken away. Does it alter my expectations? I mean, I said 7th before the season. I was then on BBC Tees, and I think I bumped that up to 6th. So you know what? I'm going to stay with 6th. I think that's as optimistic as you'll get me this season. I think that final playoff spot could well be ours. You never know.
Go on, Tom. I'm very optimistic about Taylor, by the way. 6th place.
I know. I need to lie down.
I think in terms of what I've taken away, Dana summed it up perfectly with her first point. The fact that Wilder suits this team a lot better than Warnock did. I said it earlier, the team we've been seeing since the start of the season is good technically with the ball at their feet, and they've never got the chance to show that. The last 3 games, they've had the chance to show that. Albeit in Millwall and Preston, it wasn't, you know, complete performances, but you know, yesterday was a massive improvement. We are playing as a team. And like I said, the more we play in this system. And you know what? I think the fact that we've not changed system in three games, and we don't have to constantly guess what system we're playing when the lineup comes out. I mean, not that they're coming out in number order rather than any other order makes any difference to that. But yeah, just the fact that we know what system we're going to be playing and we're going to make other teams adapt to us is really encouraging. So in terms of expectations for the season, I think at the start of the season, I said we'd beat Sheffield United in the playoff final. I just want to be clear, I no longer expect Sheffield United to be there. but the way we're going, you know, I never really see us be that team that gets momentum second half of the season and flies up to 6th, takes it into the playoffs and does well. And I want to see us do that this time, so I'm going to go 6th as well.
That's interesting. Both very optimistic. I'm going to stick with 7th for now.
Still ruining it.
It's Geordie.
I still need more quality. See, Sam Fendons. But yeah, I think the takeaways that I've had from Chris Wilder era so far, great in possession. Wing-backs are really essential to making it work. But then also, I think there's been a mindset change, I think, from Borough, because when you have Neil Warnock in, he was always leaving at the end of the season. Players, you know, if you're out the squad for now, it didn't really matter because Warnock was gone anyway. If you had a 2 or 3 year contract, the new manager would come in and then you'd probably start again in the summer. But now that Wilder's in, now that Wilder's on a 3 to 4 year deal, probably these players now will have to play for the future, regardless of the contract that they're in. And that will probably breed some sort of competitive edge in training. But then also, like, players, if they're not playing now, then they have to look for a team more quickly than they did previously. So I think that's probably helped things. But overall, possession football, absolutely love possession football, absolutely love wing-back play. And the way that we stretch teams now when we have the ball is very, very impressive. I like how compact we are when without the ball, but how we stretch and how balanced we are when we're with it on the counter-attack. It's very, very impressive. I really like the overloads we create. Tavin Ball is probably the best one when you look at it. If you look at the average positions the last three games, Mark Ball is always on Tav's shoulder. Not actual physically, but he's you imagine just like jumping on each other's shoulders during the
like
game.
A parrot.
Like a parrot.
There's
yeah.
a devil, there's an angel, and there's Mark Baller.
Mark Baller on a parrot as a parrot, but I think it's very, very good. It's creating so many overloads, so many problems for teams, and I think that is what I've taken away so far. But does it change my expectation? I still think seventh for now, but you never know. The championship is just absolutely mental. Two or three wins in a row can take you to the playoff places. And who knows? I think we've got the right man in charge. Now, I'm going to tell you what, we're in for one hell of a ride under Chris Wilder, for sure. But next question is from Ted, and he says, do you feel that we can keep the first half dominance and tempo up once the guys get fit? Obviously, quotations, but... Is that why Wilder keeps mentioning the years of injuries, etc.? Dana, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think obviously the aim would be to replicate the first half performance in the second half. But to be honest, I'm not mad that we dropped off a tiny little bit in terms of, obviously, we were dominating possession in the first half. We weren't so much in the second half, because I don't really think you can keep that up throughout the whole of the game. There's going to be tactical tweaks from the opposition that effectively force your hand to maybe change your way as well. And what was really impressive was not just that first half performance, but the second half performance, professionalism. As I mentioned, we had about, I think, three yellow cards in the space of maybe 5 or 6 minutes, or it could have been four actually, where we basically just disrupted Huddersfield trying to get a foothold in the game. And that's brilliant. That's part of the game that you need in order to grind out victories and to get winning runs ticking over. But yeah, I think once we get players back as well, it would be hopefully much better. I just hope we don't rush them back and then all of a sudden we've got a situation where, like we've seen with Dyke Seeley, comes back and then all of a sudden he's out of the team again because he's injured again. I think that's why I mentioned as well that players have to fight for their place back, because if, for example, Fry comes back and he gets injured again, we'll kind of just be going, oh God, just have a look. And I'm not saying that Borough are going to rush Dale Fry back, because I'm sure that we're not. I know he's back on, well, he's back training this at the end of the week that we are recording this on. So, yeah, obviously the aim will be to kind of keep somewhat of that tempo up in the second half, but I'm not mad if we don't, as long as we perform how we did in the second half against Huddersfield. Of course, we did lose that second half, typical of Borough, first half FC, but we just need that professionalism as we saw at the John Smiths, and I'm completely fine with that.
Okay, that's all good for me. But Tom, a player that's out injured at the moment in mind, Piero. James Harris said, how do you fit Piero into this team? And when he returns, how do you?
Well, he's got to take up one of them three centre midfield spots, obviously, but everyone playing there at the moment is getting there on merit. I think, you know, some people will have a case for dropping Tav. You know, I think he's been kind of up and down the last three games. Millwall, I thought he had one of the best games he's had for a long time in a Borough shirt. Preston, not so much. And then yesterday was kind of okay. But as we said earlier, Matt Crooks can also cover Johnny Howson's role. But I wouldn't suggest dropping any of them for Piero as soon as he comes back. I think he's got to start on the bench, make the most of his time when he comes on, and then we'll look at fitting him into the team in one of those positions. But I'm pretty sure other than the defensive midfielder, he'd be in one of Crooks and Tav's roles at the moment.
Okay, but a player who is not playing much at all is James Lea-Saliki. And Tom Muldowney sent us a question and said, to save wages and a loan spot, do we send Saliki back in January if we can, yet to play him in under Wilder, even when players have looked tired? Tom, go on, double up if you want.
Yeah, I mean, if we need space, if we need wages and we need a loan spot for anything, I can definitely see the case for sending him back. Although we did look at the stats when he signed, and statistically he should be a good player for us. It's just not happened for him for whatever reason. Whether or not we could send him back, because I'm pretty sure a future fee was mentioned, and I know sometimes that type of thing can prevent a recall clause or loan termination clause from being in there, at least on Footy Manager. But yeah, if that was an option, and Wilder wanted to bring someone in and centre mid, and Saliki wasn't going to get a looking for the rest of the season, then I can definitely see the case for terminating that loan.
Okay, then the final question, then it's from Mike and at Ayrson Gate, and he says, after Matt Crooks and Christmas, what is the third best tree in the world?
There isn't a third best tree in the world. It's just Matt Crooks, Matt Crooks, and Matt Crooks. I mean, that's it. It's even better than the Christmas tree. I mean, the Christmas tree isn't in the conversation for me. It's just Matt Crooks.
I wonder
though, what type of tree would Matt Crooks be? I think that's the question of the day to the listeners. What tree would Matt Crooks actually be?
Redwood. I would go with a white oak. A white oak tree.
I would go with Tom with redwood like.
Oh right, okay, fair enough. We'll discuss that, because the tree itself is at Shithouse Island. Danny Mills has entered the island this week, thanks to a vote from you guys. Danny Mills, are you happy with the vote, and how do you think he's going to compare in Shithouse Island, Dana?
There's a lot
of strong members in there at the moment.
Yeah, hard man there, isn't he, Danny Mills? I mean, he did effectively assist a very, very good Gaiska Mendieta goal by scrapping with one of the Wolves fullbacks, which is one of our followers did flag that up for him to be on Shithouse Island. He, of course, then went after Robbie Savage, I think, later on in that season against Leicester, or maybe before. I don't know what the placement of that game, but I'm pretty happy with Danny Mills as part of that Shithouse Island. I think that's a very good signing.
Good sign for the island. Captain Danny Ayala will be assessing him now and helping him get him back into his apartment. But we'll see who's going to enter it next. And if you do think you've got a suggestion on who should enter Shithouse Island, please do let us know. But it has to be good. It's hot enough now in Shithouse Island. And of course, by the end of the season, we'll have to vote out who's going to be the top Shithouse Islander. Yeah. But let's move on to next Saturday's game in Swansea City. Dan, I'm going to pass the mic over to you guys. Let's break them down. Unfortunately, we couldn't get a Swansea perspective this week, but let's break them down anyway and see what we're hoping to expect at the Riverside.
They set up in a 3-4-2-1 formation with three ball-playing centre-halves, two very advanced wing-backs in Ryan Manning and Ethan Laird. Laird is on loan. You've got Jamie Patterson and Oliver Ncham supporting Joel Perreault up front. He's their top scorer on 10 goals. Jamie Patterson's on 8 goals and 4 assists, which I think we can add for fuck's sake on the end of that, because of course we did have him on trial in the summer, and then for whatever reason Warnock decided that it wasn't going to be anything other than that.
He would fit Chris Wilder's system so well now as well, which is arguably more frustrating, but
I suppose it's the way that the cards fell, to be honest, because he probably didn't under Warnock, but he does under Wilder. So it was one that got away, I suppose. It's one of those irritating ones. He's probably definitely scoring against us on Saturday, but it is what it is. You could already write that into the script. But in terms of their style of play, they are a passing side. They are the passing side of the Championship. They average 520 accurate passes per match, which is the most in the division by some margin as well. They average the highest percent of possession in the league with 65.8. I did look into their forums though, and one of their posters said, it feels like we need 100 passes to create one chance. So there does seem to be maybe of late a little bit of annoyance to our towards the style of play, that it is just passing for the sake of it. But they do have 9 clean sheets in the league this season. The most is 10. You would think that they're pretty watertight defensively, but I looked at the goals in their last game against Reading and they looked anything but. Reading picked them apart with very aggressive press against their passing, effectively forced them into mistakes in tight areas. It was said, though, that Reading did park the bus. I don't think Borough will do that because Chris Wilder's been big on playing on the front foot. So I think as long as Borough are aggressive, as we were against Huddersfield, against Swansea, then we might well have some luck against them.
Okay. With that, obviously, in mind, it's going to be a game where we'll probably see Borough with not much possession at all. I think they'll definitely try to dominate. But like you're saying, like with possession, it's what you do with it at times. And it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. But I think it could suit Borough this game. I really do. I think with a team sometimes who plays that possession style, sometimes you overplay and create mistakes. And the likely mistakes, hope we've got to try and punish them at that time. But whether we do or not, is another story. Tom, is there any more to add to Swansea, or do you want to go for your prediction?
Yeah, I mean, they were the form team, weren't they? But they've actually only won 2 in the last 5 games. After beating Coventry 2-1 away, which is a very good result for them because Coventry had been great this season, especially
yeah,
at home. They got absolutely battered 4-0 off Bournemouth. And then looking at it since then, they've drawn 1-1 with Blackpool since they came back from the international break. Beat Barnsley 2-0 away, although that's really nothing to brag about. We've seen Barnsley play this season. And then there was that game yesterday where they let me down on my bet against Reading. So I'm hoping since the international break, they might have come back with a bit of a bruise to their confidence. And that's something we hopefully should be able to take advantage of, considering our players should be confident at the moment with how their performance over the last few games have been.
It's going to be an interesting match. Obviously, 2 teams that want to dominate the ball, they want to get in possession of it. And obviously, Borough being the home side, you would hope that we would have a decent share of possession. I certainly don't think that we're going to sit back and do a Reading and kind of camp, set up Jose Mourinho-style tactics. But it is going to be intriguing because they've got some fantastic players in attacking areas of the pitch. Obviously, the wing-backs, Patterson, Cham, Perrault. It's a pretty decent attack, that is. So I think it's going to be a test for Borough's defence. But I think where that game is going to be won is in the midfield.
Absolutely. So let's talk about predictions then, guys, because how are we feeling for Saturday's game against Swansea? You feel optimistic? Are we not? What do you think?
I'm going to go with a narrow Borough victory. I think tails are up. Swansea's confidence is a little bit down. I still think they're going to play well and be a tough stern test for us. But I'm going to say 2-1. I think we'll just about edge it.
Just edge it for today. So 2-1. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I was also going to go for 2-1. I can't see us keeping a clean sheet. And even though after yesterday, I do feel like second half goals are going to be a priority for Wilder and trying to get to the bottom of that issue and coach that out with the team. I think this might come a little bit too soon for a solution. So yeah, 2-1, I think.
2-1. Okay, I'm going to go with 1-1, I think. I think it's going to be a really difficult game for us. Sometimes when a team's too dominant, they can tire you out. I think they can tire you out. But with possession ball, it's all about the running, isn't it? It's all about the what you do out without possession that makes it so successful, and the runs. And you know, it depends how Borough line up. I think if we keep compact at times and we try to break with our pace, I think we could cause some problems. It's all in our press and all our off. I think what will win the game is the movement off the ball. We'll probably decide that game. But I'm going to go with 1-1, I think, and I think Jamie Patterson's going to score the opener. just given it's in the light, isn't it?
It's going to happen, isn't it?
Absolute typical Borough. But that's it, guys. Thank you very much for joining me, as always. And thank you to listener for listening all the way through the podcast. And a win at last for Chris Wilder's Middlesbrough. It's going to be one hell of a ride this season, isn't it? This is the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was our match day chatter. In a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.